session number 30304.
Reel 23. Ted, I believe as well, while you were there at that stage, the Crown Film Unit came to film some air-to-air scenes.
Yes, it was a welcome arrival, because it did get a bit boring. Well, not boring, really. It's always interesting, but it's nice to have a change occasionally, and certainly flying for the Crown Film Unit was a change. And the things they wanted done were quite amazing, not so much from our point of view, but also from the point of view of the camera operators. They were, well, I can only say, brave chaps, because it did eventually involve fixing up some kind of angular structure with the door of one of the Hudsons taken off, and almost sort of, well, the camera was certainly outside the line of the aircraft, and the operator must have been almost blown away. I don't know how he clung on. Then on one occasion, I had to have the cameraman in the nose of the Hudson for another particular type of flying. Anyway, they came sometime in the early summer of 1942, because Coastal Command had been left behind, of course, from any showing on the cinema screens of what actually happened to actual people engaged in flying these operations. And Bomber Command Fighter Command had some time on the, well, certainly deserved it, of course, and they had it in the earlier part of the war. But then Bomber Command came up, or the Crown Film Unit decided that they would give some idea of what happened in Bomber Command by filming F for Freddy.
I don't think they would be appreciated now in quite the same technical terms that they were then, but if the people who had any doubts about their value as cinematography, they would have given some accolades to the cameramen, I can assure you, because they certainly put themselves through every known physical position, as well as taking a buffeting now and again from either the maneuver of the aircraft or the elements getting at them, whereas they wouldn't have done if they hadn't taken the door off. First of all, it was intended that this was going to be the story of a flying boat patrol, and we did about 20, well, I personally did about 20 hours flying. And then when I saw the film eventually, down to a flash here and a flash there, I was rather surprised, but it's quite understandable because of the story. And I certainly enjoyed very much the flying that I had to do, together with Johnny Lane, one of my best friends, and Squadron Leader Hodgkinson, who was the CO of the unit. And the idea, so far as the Hudsons were concerned, was that the operation shown in the film would take place from a base in Iceland. And so we had to The film had to be joined together, as it were, because 269 Squadron in Iceland provided most of the aircraft needed for, as if they were joining up into a formation, and then it was carried on at Silloth on two occasions. So I won't distinguish between the two, rather regard it as a whole, because they couldn't get everything done on the first occasion. The Crown Film Unit operators obviously had to use aircraft. They had the use of aircraft when it suited the unit from which those aircraft were being drawn. So they were dashing about, perhaps doing a bit here and a bit there. And when we remember that Blenheims were involved as well, and another Blenheim, which was altered to resemble a Junkers 88, another flying boat to meet the one about which the story was being told. It did involve quite a lot of aircraft, which were not easily spared by their units at this time because of pressure on the need for a maximum flying time on the main job, well, the only job, which was, of course, the Battle of the Atlantic at that particular time. So when they arrived in Silloth, what the Crown Film Unit wanted was a continuation of this squadron. I'm not sure that it was shown in the film, actually. I think there was a very brief shot of it. But they wanted a continuation of this squadron of Hudsons in formation, flying for a short period of time. And so we put up nine aircraft on one occasion just for that purpose, and one aircraft with a camera aircraft to take shots of it. And this was a scene never before seen in Silloth, that we should fly across the front of the town, and nine aircraft in formation, and we heard of various townspeople who thought this was going to be a big operation against the enemy. But it was only very short-lived before they realized that for some reason we were all eventually going back to the airfield to land. So that was the squadron in three VIC formations. That was the usual for a nine-aircraft flight. And the VIC is simply three aircraft, a leader and one on each side of him. And so the three in front, three on one side, three on the other side. Well, that over with, they wanted then a specialist, shall we say, if I can apply that to the type of flying as well as the type of camera work, give you a better idea of what it entailed. For one thing, they wanted, and this is quite clear in the film, they wanted one Hudson to be shot down. So the nearest, of course, that this could be depicted was by having an aircraft filmed in a fairly shallow dive, as though the pilot wasn't all that anxious to get down, or maybe he wanted the flames to flow in, fly by in a certain way. And so an airman was put in the cabin of my aircraft, and was detailed to let off a red smoke candle, as it was, or flare or whatever, some kind of incendiary. But it was it emitted a lot of red smoke. So when the camera aircraft, I think Johnny Lane flew it, was in position, I started in this fairly shallow dive going towards the land from out in the bay. And when we got the signal, the airman let off this red smoke coming from the cabin, and all the way down, of course, this smoke was streaming from the aircraft, and it hadn't finished, and by the time I was going back towards the airfield, which meant flying over the town, on the way back to land. And by the time I landed, I was told that the fire brigade was out, and various other, crowds had been gathered. I don't suppose it was meant that we were supposed to fly over the town with it. This was quite innocently done, of course. But the funny thing was, inside the aircraft, that I looked back as the airman opened the door which led into the cabin, back into the aircraft. And he was like a red Indian. His hair was red, his face was red, everything was red about him. And for a few days after that, he was known as Rufus. It was so funny to see him appear like that. So that was one of the shots that they were, one of the scenes that they wanted. Another one was to get as close as possible to an aircraft, Hudson above, opening its bomb doors and actually dropping a bomb. So this was pretty tricky. It was, I had to get quite close to the aircraft. So with Johnny in the aircraft above, I was climbing up underneath it, and he had a chap on board to tell him whereabouts I was. I found that the best way to the best view for the cameraman in the nose of my aircraft was if I swapped from the left-hand seat, I remember, into the right-hand seat. Because then, as I was going at that angle past the bomb doors, I could see better than I would in the left. Anyway, that was okay. We pulled it off. That was done successfully. I'm not sure that it was shown in the film, but it may have been that. The camera, it was very difficult to try and line up at the appropriate moment to get, because the cameraman was in the nose of the aircraft, and I obviously couldn't fly directly under at the at the time that the bomb dropped. We had to synchronize our speeds. For one thing, I can't remember. I think I was so taken up in the moment that it just seemed to come off all right. But whether it was satisfactory or not, and for that reason, perhaps it wasn't included in the film. I don't know. Anyway, they then had to, I think that's as much, we did one or two other flying sequences, but I can't remember them offhand. But then they had to go off to a Beaufort station, I think it was, to do some filming there, because it just happened that there were aircraft available. And it wasn't long before they came back again they arrived back just off Elsa Craig, off the west coast of Scotland, which was the area in which we were doing this filming. And they had the use for one day only of HMS Cardiff, which was, I think it was Cardiff, one of the cruisers anyway, which was slightly altered to resemble a German bucket battleship, and that's the one that appears in the film. And they wanted a shot of a Hudson diving from about 4,000 feet, so that the aircraft in approaching the warship would drop a bomb and be photographed from the camera in the nose of another aircraft, which was mine. So I had to approach from the stern of this warship, and Johnny Lane was watching the squadron leader in his aircraft up at 4,000 feet, and marvelously in those days we were RT'd, we were actually in radio telephony with each other, and he was Hodge, the squadron leader, was telling us when he was starting his dive. Johnny had to interpret the angle of dive so that we could get some idea of when the aircraft was likely to approach the ship. And as his aircraft flew over, the crew of the warship were going to throw some exploding material, whatever it was, over the sides of the ship, so that this explosion happened in the right place at the right time. My job was to have the cameraman as close to the warship as possible, a little higher than the funnel of the warship, so that all this was synchronized. The dive and the squadron leader pulling out of the dive, the dropping of the bomb, the explosion, and my aircraft in a position to film it. So we were approaching the warship, and it was obvious that I was before time. I was going to be there too early. And so the only thing to do, of course, the time-honored thing, if you want to get down to your lowest speed, put your undercarriage down, put some flap down, throttle back. I remember Johnny coming towards the front of the aircraft and saying if we go much further, we're going to land on that ruddy ship. And we were just about hovering, hanging on the props, I think he said that, at about 100 knots. It's not very safe to let it go below 100 knots. Staggering in, almost feeling the aircraft sort of not liking it very much. And suddenly he said, he's down, he's coming, he's there. And then I had to, and the cameraman was okay. And as I rammed on the throttles, brought up the undercarriage and the flap, we just sort of seemed to skim past the funnel. I suppose it must have been high enough to avoid any flagpole, and the splash from whatever they'd thrown over, whatever it was in the explosion, we got some of the water thrown up on the windscreen of the aircraft. And so we were away and went back and landed, and they were very well satisfied with the whole thing, thankfully.
How would you organise a day's filming with them? Would you be briefed with them, or would they come to you and say what they wanted and you'd have to work it out?
Oh, yes. Well, they'd no idea how we could... Well, I suppose I'm not suggesting they were ignorant of it at all, but even if they'd said, well, you can do this with a certain aircraft and do that with a... I don't think they fully realised the value of to have a visible... nose cone, I can't think of the word again, on the Hudson, when you can see everything through it, and you've got two panels down the side as well. So, you know, you get the camera right up into that. So we were able to help in that respect. Whether they looked over a Hudson before deciding what shots they would be possible or not, I don't really know. It was a rush job in the sense that what we had, we only had for a short period of time, and then they would have to go, or of course, you know, we couldn't hang on to a warship for very long because they were needed desperately in other places. So we sort of worked it out together, what would be the best thing to do.
So would they have an idea of the type of thing that they would like, the kind of shot?
Oh, yes.
Would that be up to you, really, to work out the flying aspects to get that for them?
Yeah, that's how it's done.
And how big was this group of from the Crown Film Unit?
Three of them, four of them. I don't remember. It's the sort of detail you don't remember. You're talking to somebody about something, and whether there's somebody else over there connecting with it or not. You know. Well, we had a sort of briefing, a very brief briefing, before the whole thing started, as to what the theme was. So... whatever the outcome, we certainly enjoyed it.
Did you see the film?
Oh, yes. Later on, well, they said, you know, anytime you want to have a look at it, let us know in Pinewood, and we'll arrange it. And then, of course, it was at the end of that summer, well, in the early autumn, I was posted from Sillith to Iceland, to 269 Squadron. And so I didn't see it until 1944, when I was on the staff at Headquarters Coastal Command. And I happened to There was, I think she was, she joined the RAF actually, since she'd been a continuity girl at what's the film?
Pinewood.
Just imagine, you can forget a word, and I've only just said it about 2 or 3 minutes ago. At Pinewood. And she said, oh, I'll fix it for you. So I had the use of a car out to Pinewood, and they put on a special showing. There were others who came in. It seemed to me that Pinewood at that time, it was taken over, of course, I think totally by the Crown Film Unit, and there were various things being made. I remember being shown how they were making a film about the airborne lifeboats that were being put on Warwick's and some Hudson's as well, I think, and so on. And it was quite surprising that there were other films being shown as well, mostly. There was one film, I can't remember the title of it, which was pre-war, and there were one or two people watching it, and I could only suppose that either they were taking time off or they wanted to see this film for some technical reason connected with one that they were working on, how they did it then, and so on. And that was being generous to them, I think. The surprising thing was that when this film was shown in a small special projecting room, there were other people there, perhaps they were there and they hadn't seen it themselves to see what so-and-so, or whether so-and-so had made a decent job of it, and so on. But there was quite a lot of activity. It was certainly very pleasant to be able to see it in those circumstances and see a bit of Pinewood. But as I say, I couldn't really, and the hand on my heart, justify 20, on my own personal flying time, 20 hours. So Johnny Lane must have had, I don't think he did quite as much flying as I did then, but say 15 hours, and squadron leader 10 hours or whatever, and then this flight of 9 Hudsons, whether it justified this 60-second burst of Hudson activity in the film itself or not. I don't know. But anyway, that was left to somebody else to justify. I was certainly pleased to be able to do a flying.
What did you think of the film when you saw it?
I think it could have been done better, quite frankly. I think it was a pity that, and I hope that it doesn't take this personally, but I think it was a pity that the skipper of the Sunderland, the star of the show, was the only word I can really use to give a general idea of what I mean. He was a bit of a toff, and I think the effort that was being made by ordinary people during the war would have been better if it had been a rather different sort of character.